For February the 1st, 2019, we talk about the Steam Epic Metro controversy, Resident Evil 2, and we ask you about your favorite video game black sheep. Welcome to Level 272. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis.
Thank you. Glad to be out of the cistern. I mean, back.
Yeah. We welded the top shut, which I think showed a real lack of foresight.
You know, it's you just don't understand the strength of human fingernails to scrape through eventually until you try.
Pressure and time, my friend. Pressure and time. No, it's good to have you. It's good to have you back. It's been it's been a little bit, but you've been real busy. You've been traveling for work, I think.
Oh, yeah. Doing all the things. So traveling for work. And then we have finished up renovations on the cistern. Very happy with how that's looking now. And a mass of other things that tend to happen when you have a bunch of kids, but, I'm super excited to be back and chatting about games and hanging out with you cool cats.
Yeah.
By which I mean, Greta, you guys are okay, I guess.
Yeah. We're just here. If I say her name, she's going to wake up, but she's just curled up asleep on the chair on the other side of the room.
What an attentive good girl.
I know, right? She just wants to be in the same room with me. And she weirdly has figured out the schedule on the auto feeder. I don't mean to turn this into pets do the damnedest thing, but like it runs at 8 a.m., 12, mm-hmm. like 12 noon, 4, and then 8 p.m., you know? Putting out just a little bit of kibble, right? I've configured it to be what she needs, and then she'll go and she'll eat it, then she'll walk away. She doesn't like wait outside of it. She like walks into the dining room where that food is at, like a minute before it goes, and then just goes. And like, can you read a clock? Is that
well? You know, birds have that like migratory instinct. Yeah, cats have the instinct for free food.
Yeah, they have the instinct. So that's a secret. It should be charging her for the food. Yeah.
Only if you want your furniture clawed.
Yeah. No, I don't want that. How you doing, David?
I'm making do, living the dream. Kind of bobbing and weaving.
Yeah. Is New York going to get hit by the crazy polar vortex stuff up there?
I don't know. Like, if you watch the weather maps, it's definitely in the path. But then I looked on like weather.com, and they're saying it will drop to like 17 degrees for one day, and then within like a day or two be back to like 30s or 40s or something.
Yeah, I can't make head or tails of what it's going to be. So, it's just gonna suck. I know that.
And please let's call this what it is. It is the polar tea bag.
Yeah, it's just gonna drip. It just bloop, blorp down, yep. And then come back up. Yeah.
I've seen the purple animation. I know what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, I don't have too much going on. This past weekend was dominated by Resident Evil 2, so which I'm gonna save that for the grind. And then last week I've got a question. Have either of you guys gotten root canals?
Oh, I was on the verge of it.
Okay, so neither of you have. Dennis, you were on the verge of one? Did you just have bad cavity and they cleared it up with antibiotics?
Since, I went in for a routine cleaning before Thanksgiving. They found a chip in my tooth that they said needed a crown. I had no pain, nothing. They screwed it up. I changed dentists and was on the verge of needing a root canal. But to tell your story, and then mine kind of finishes on a high note. So,
it's been a very long time since I've been to the dentist because the places where I've worked have not had dental insurance. And I figured I'm young and invincible, whatever. A few months ago, like starting in September, around the time of my move, I started getting a toothache and it got worse and worse. And I was looking looking at the calendar, like I can probably sign up and afford dental insurance in the new year, all that kind of stuff. And I waited and went into the dentist and like, yeah, this tooth is dead. So I had to get that. And the numbing didn't work.
No.
Yeah, they said it was the damnedest thing. I got like 8 injections of my gum. What finally did it? They had to like switch around the order of the operations, literally the order of operations, and open up the tooth and inject the numbing stuff directly into the pulp of my tooth.
Oh, good lord!
Yeah, it's fine now. I've got a little temporary crown on there. Gonna get the later one, but I just wanted to do 2 things. Thanks for all the support in the new year, everybody. You've helped me afford dental insurance and this incredibly expensive operation. And also, if you have a toothache, go to the dentist.
Oh,
so
man.
Did the dentist in fact describe the whole thing as quote the darndest thing? Because I feel like that would kind of worry me.
No, he didn't describe it as the darndest thing.
Yeah, those Mansfield dentists.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things. You know, that this might just be like machismo is a weird thing to say to describe to myself, but like you. When working with a medical professional, I don't want to be a wimp and say like, oh, I feel it. Please, please, physician, more ether, something like that. Right. You know, just like, I have no idea what the normal amount of pain is, when in reality, the normal amount of pain is none. And so like, he asked how I was doing. I was like, yeah, I can really feel you drilling away most of my tooth there. He's like, okay, let's do that. And we just kept on doing it. And he was looking in my eyes and saying like, oh yeah, you can feel that, can't you? I'm like, yeah.
I hope he didn't say it with that inflection. Oh, you can feel that, can't you?
Kinda.
Come here.
I know for me at least, like one of my random life, like, I don't know, you play like a D&D game and you have to choose like the perks and drawbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the weird one for me that apparently runs in the family is generally higher than normal pain tolerance, but also the fact that like anesthesia doesn't work very well.
Oh, fun.
So, yeah, so, like, that's a fairly common, thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a thing in my family, too. Like, it just, yeah. the stories I could tell you, oh, just even about childbirth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Can't keep a good person under.
No.
The other one that's kind of, I don't know how we got on the topic of just like weird medical stuff, but that's kind of weird for me is, I don't know, have either you guys ever been under general anesthesia before?
Yes.
So apparently certain people, it affects different people different ways, and certain people, which I'm apparently one of them, it just makes when they wake up, they just get incredibly angry.
It's the altered carbon effect.
Yeah.
a number of sci-fi movies.
Yeah, you get put in a new sleeve and it's like, oh, he's rejecting the host. Yeah.
Yeah, so like the, for example, when I was young, I got my tonsils removed for various reasons, and when I woke up, proceeded to immediately like rip the IV out of my arm and like freak the heck out.
That's
so
amazing.
I think the
Sorry, true. Where's my wife?
Yeah, I think the moral of the story is I'm always afraid to go to the doctor because I'm afraid they have some sort of network of like who are the bad patients.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
They'll look me up and know.
Yeah, it's like,
I'm not afraid of you. I'm afraid for you.
Yeah, it's like in Seinfeld when Elaine had difficult added to her chart, and all of a sudden doctors started canceling appointments. Yeah, no. When I was probably about like 10 years old or something like that, you know, I've been pretty open about having trash guts for most of my life, just having like nausea problems and just general digestive malady. Parents got worried about this and like, okay, well, let's let's run an endoscopy and just see if, you know, just to make sure like there's nothing like physically wrong. It turned out to just be mental, but the endoscopy, you know, they put you under, and they stick a tube with a camera down your throat, okay, and proceed to me waking up in the middle of this and trying to fight the doctor off and pull it out of my throat.
Yeah. See, on the plus side, you know that if you know you're ever in some sort of like horror movie where the mad scientist is trying to, I don't know, implant the zombie parasite or whatever, you've got a fairly good chance of, you know, taking him on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just how many tranquilizer darts will it take to put me down? I don't know.
We won't know until we try.
Yeah. So now that we made everybody thoroughly uncomfortable. I just want to put that, you know,
that's basically our job.
Yeah, I was probably more like entertain them and offer criticism and observation. Yeah, no, uncomfortable is the way to do it. I just, we talk about things that happen in life, and that was something that happened last week. Yeah, so go to the dentist. It'll save you money, and you won't have to have your tooth opened up while you can feel everything. Anyway, we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis, you had two stories here, so I'm going to throw to you first.
I did, and I felt compelled to do two, because the first one is not necessarily video game related. Mm-hmm. However, it is game we have talked about, or I have talked about on this show related. Mm-hmm. And I believe now Ben has talked about on the show too. It's no secret that I'm a big fan of Mansions of Madness, specifically the second edition that runs with an app, board game, with kind of procedurally generated tiles. All right, that's a falsehood. The tiles are revealed sequentially.
Yeah.
By the app. They're in a consistent format. But you know, it's a great game. It kind of has an auto GM aspect to it, et cetera. And, we actually have kind of run our course with it. We have played all of the missions, me and the family group that I play with, in the base pack. So we either need to start shelling out for, new packs, doing bootleg missions, which I'm not opposed to,
right?
Or find something else to play. And as if on cue, Fantasy Flight Games announced The Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-earth, which is essentially Mansions of Madness meets Gloomhaven meets Tolkien.
Huh.
So it's the same kind of app-controlled format where you kind of lay out the tiles as the app tells you, and the app kind of dictates dialogue and stuff like that. It has a Gloomhaven-style card system where you're not rolling dice, you're drawing from a deck.
Okay.
And the key mechanic is that you can choose to either play a card for successes when you draw it or set it aside. You don't get the immediate successes, but then you can use it later for a more powerful skill. But that takes it out of your like draw pile, essentially. So really, really intriguing idea behind it. And then, of course, Lord of the Rings is the perfect setting for the group that I play with.
Yeah.
Because I will not be surprised if my sister-in-law or her boyfriend show up in costume for some Lord of the Rings junk. Like I would not be surprised if there were elf ears. So it just could not have been better timed, and I'm excited for it. So Cole, I'm going to steal your A Thing Exists style story on that one.
No, that's
and neat. And be excited. So it comes out in Q2 this year. So. 3 months ish now, before delays, of course.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Look at that. It comes with little minis too.
Yeah. I'm excited for the minis in particular because I've started seeding the idea of playing the actual Lord of the Rings pen and paper game with this group, which I think, you know, aforementioned sister-in-law and boyfriend will be there with bells on.
Right.
The rest of the crowd, it might be like one step outside of their comfort zone.
Just a little much, probably.
Yeah, all the way to it. Who knows? I mean, you know, you never know. I've been surprised before by what this group is down for. So we'll see. But I think if this is a nice little gateway drug to get them in on the Lord of the Rings universe, and then we can go all the way and have some fun with the pen and paper game.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's exciting. There was a pre-order version that had like special play mats. It looks like that's since been sold out, but yeah. I got in on it. So excited to have that pop up whenever it decides to ship.
Nice.
Speaking of pre-order versions.
Oh, yes. Steam continues to throw temper tantrums because suddenly it has serious competition. They announced earlier today, I believe, earlier today as of this recording, that Metro Exodus is no longer going to be available on Steam. It's only going to come out through the Epic Store. I'm sure people listening have heard about that before. I think we've talked about it to some extent. You know, Epic seems really serious about going all in on becoming a storefront to compete with Steam.
We've spoken about it in relation to kind of their free game giveaway to get people in through the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so now all pre-orders are going to be on the Epic Games Store. So if you pre-ordered on Steam, they will honor that in Epic Games Store. I don't know how that works. It's kind of an interesting choice in my mind. But man, Steam put out the most passive-aggressive post I have ever seen.
Yeah.
I actually think I'd take Steam's side on this, though. Like that.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah. All right, I want to hear this.
Well, I'd say a combination of things. I mean, one, I think doing that after the fact, I think is just all around like, I don't know, a questionable business move. And I think in general, the whole idea of, paid exclusivity is basically rent-seeking behavior. So, yeah. I mean, I don't think... I wouldn't consider this a legitimate business practice because, I mean, Epic's not actually contributing anything. They're just throwing money around to get an advantage.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I can see that. I think, you know, the power dynamic with Steam is something a lot of people are sick of and happy to see changing in any form.
Mm-hmm.
So, was there ever really a power dynamic? Like, did Steam ever pay any, or, you know, say if you want to be on our system, you have to be exclusive, or like we'll pay you to not go on this other system?
No, the power and leverage just kind of came from a functional monopoly that you just, if you want to get online games, you get them from Steam, you know? Like, just that.
I guess I'd rather see a functional monopoly than one that's just based on, like, we'll pay you money to be a monopoly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it plays out. I tend to think competition is good. But, yeah, time will tell.
Which is why you should hate this.
I want to read the announcement, though, because, good Lord, you can almost hear the person writing it.
Yeah,
seething.
Do it.
Later today, sales of Metro Exodus will be discontinued on Steam due to a publisher decision to make the game exclusive to another PC store.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even name them. Yeah. Just in case someone would figure out what that store is I'm sure the strategic thought behind it. The developer and publisher have assured us that all prior sales of the game on Steam will be fulfilled on Steam and Steam owners will be able to access the game in any future updates or DLC through Steam. We think the decision to remove the game is unfair to Steam customers, especially after a long pre-sale period. Apologize to Steam customers, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, just the fact that this isn't fair rolled into that statement in any way is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess my take on this, it's good that Deep Silver is going to still fulfill those pre-orders, right? I think that if they wanted to avoid any kind of sourness or saltiness or whatever taste you want, maybe wait for a game that wasn't already on pre-sale, you know? Here's a tweet that I saw. This is from somebody named Mike Futter. He was retweeted by somebody who I follow. Big February games: Metro Exodus, not on Steam. Anthem, not on Steam. Crackdown 3, not on Steam. Far Cry New Dawn, on Steam, but The Division 2 could set precedent for the future. Jump Force, on Steam. Dead or Alive 6, on Steam. this is a real problem for them, and Steam, like, Valve needs to figure out how to stop this, how to stop this exodus, because, you know, this is a small leak that is going to lead to a lot more kind of a lot more diaspora. And I think that the easiest lever for them to pull, it's not going to be a fun one for them to pull, will be to change their developer split, because in no world does Steam deserve 30% of a cut off of whatever is sold. That is not reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, you decide what your services are worth, mm-hmm. And you can decide it's 30% when you don't have competition. It's interesting, because this is what we're seeing is, I was going to say a small number of people, but it's not even that.
Mm-hmm.
A large number of people doing what everyone seems to have been wanting to do for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to your point, David, or Cole, maybe you said it, like, why not just wait for a game that's not on presale? Why does it have to be this game now?
Mm-hmm.
And the only answer is people are just so fed up and over it that now that they've seen a crack in the dam, they can't help but rush through.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's going to get people to stop using Steam, just because ecosystem lock-in is a hell of a drug,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I've got 1,000 games on Steam. where am I going to go? It's not like I'm going to stop using it, because I'm not going to relinquish all of those titles. But yeah, I mean, it just creates problems for the future. And I think that Valve has gone for a long time not responding to people's concerns about their marketplace. And, you know, regardless of what's on the other side of that equation, you know, whatever Epic is doing to lure people away, and timed exclusives are really a problem, especially when it is for no reason other than, you know, just if it's for no reason, right. other than money. Right. Like, I can, you know, I don't really look sideways the fact that, like, EA has Origin, and that's where they do that. That's where all EA stuff goes. Like, that sucks. And, you know, it makes it harder for me to work up any kind of ambition to play EA games, but I can understand a publisher storefront. I veered all over the road here. Going back to this, though, regardless of what's on the other side of that equation, what Epic is doing to lure people away, I think that on the near side, on Valve's side, there are deficits and kind of relational debts that they just have not settled, and mm-hmm. have been really safe not settling, or felt really safe not settling, because they thought that their position was stronger than it actually is.
Yeah. This is when your significant other picks a fight over milk because they're mad about the thing that happened last week.
Kind of.
Yeah. So I'd be interested to know, has anyone messed with the Epic Store? Do they provide a good product?
I know Ben has. I believe Ben has. I have not, but that's just mostly because of inertia.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure you can buy games and download them. I don't know that it has the social crap that Steam has, but then again, I'm not on Steam for the social crap, and I'm actively displeased by any of those elements when I see them.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same place. Like, yes, all my games are on Steam right now, but of those, all my games I've played maybe 5 of them in the last year.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see a big list, but at the same time, if the same 5 games that matter are on the Epic Store,
mm-hmm.
and I'm getting free stuff besides, and I feel like I'm doing more to support the people making the games,
mm-hmm.
instead of the people who are connecting the pipes, then it's not a hard decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, although my concern would be just from the standpoint of, you know, kind of continuing access to games. I think, you know, Steam's kind of been good for that.
Oh, in terms of just kind of archival stuff in perpetuity, you bought it and it's always going to be
and
available.
And just, like, I don't know, you know, it remains to be seen, like, to my knowledge, I don't think Steam has ever removed a game that they weren't forced to. Whereas, yeah. You know, maybe not Epic quite so much, but, like, I would not be surprised at all if I heard that, you know, EA said, like, yeah, we decided we don't care about letting people download the games they bought anymore.
I mean, EA specifically, like, on Origin, you cannot get Sims 2 anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, if you bought Sims 2, can you still get it?
I haven't tried it.
Holy shit, guys. Do you know what the free game on the Epic Launcher or Epic Store is right now?
Jackbox.
Mm. Yeah, the Jackbox Party Pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good get.
Yeah. Next one is Axiom Verge. That's a good game. Yeah, they've been spitting fire. I don't know how much they can do that, how much longer they can do that, or if it's tenable. But then again, they've got more money than God, at least right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really weird to me that right now, when we look at these marketplaces that are available, the three major ones, I'm not including Humble in this because that's different, Steam, GOG, and obviously Epic are run by developers slash publishers. GOG is run by CD Projekt Red, the people who make the Witcher series.
Hmm.
Like, that just, I don't know, that's never sat right with me. And I, you know, it's not that I've seen especially Steam, like, privileged traffic to Valve games, because what Valve games? but yeah, I just for some reason that just I would feel better about somebody who was not making their own shit selling me other people's shit.
So, although, to be fair on that note, like, can we really consider Valve to be a developer in any meaningful way?
That was my lol what games crack.
Well, yeah, I mean just then doesn't that kind of fix that problem?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, maybe. But they still do Dota and all that. I don't know. It's the line holds true. Valve does not make games, they make money. At least for now. Other pre-order stuff, because this is a real problem, apparently. Now, David, what did GameStop do?
Yeah, so GameStop basically sold a whole bunch of pre-orders to the PlayStation 4 special edition Kingdom Hearts 3 version, which was exclusive to GameStop, at least in the U.S. I'm not sure about other places, and then canceled them because they sold more than they actually had.
So this isn't just the game. It is Kingdom Hearts 3 themed PlayStation 4.
It's right. Subtle too. I finally scrolled down to see the picture, and man, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's actually a really good looking system.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Too bad not a lot of people are going to get it.
yeah. And it's kind of frustrating because, like, normal people would, you know, call this fraud.
right.
Or, you know.
I mean, especially when it's one actor that does this and it's not a whole industry, like, say, airlines, which do this all the time.
Yeah.
Exactly. due to our policy of overselling flights, this flight is oversold.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So. Well, they're at least giving everyone a $25 coupon code.
Cool.
So essentially a $25 gift card.
Yeah.
Right. And that obviously getting their money back for the pre-order too.
Cannot be used in store, or is it cannot be used online? There's one or the other.
For a future GameStop order, but I don't see anything that specifies.
Yeah, I don't know. Even if it was online, if it was one or the other, you would be able to like place the order online and do it like an in-store pickup if you didn't want to get it shipped to you and stuff. Okay. But it's really interesting that they did $25 because I don't know about you. You can't really walk out of GameStop for less than $60 if you're going to be buying a new game, you know. So you get that $25. Well, still buy Kingdom Hearts 3 from us, and also give us that extra $35, please. Money, please.
Oh, cool. Three-quarters of a Funko Pop. Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a really interesting tweet from GameStop. Our heart was just to make sure that consumers' experience with the pre-order matched their experience with Kingdom Hearts 3.
Sick burn on Kingdom Hearts. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like the other side of this is, you know, GameStop's known for, I guess the nice way to put it would be, you know, pressuring their employees into getting people to sign up for pre-orders.
That's not so much the case anymore. That has gone downhill. That practice has gone down quite a bit.
That's fortunate.
Yeah. Just based on talking with people who still worked there and then my experiences recently going in, the hard sell on reses is not necessarily as big. However, they do still try and push like guarantee protection plans for individual games, and also they push their membership card. Yeah.
At least for me, going back to a previous story, I prefer the, you know, guaranteed protection plan of buying it on Steam.
Oh man, but this sucks. This sucks.
That's yeah, and I don't know. It just sucks that, you know, they can get away with it.
Yeah. Mm. Oh well. Oh, that's a handsome controller too. Like, I have no affection for the Kingdom Hearts aesthetic, but the monochrome buttons.
Yeah, that's something else.
Yeah. Oh,
it's hard to imagine anything about Kingdom Hearts 3 being understated.
Here we are. I don't know though. That's a game that knows where it's at when it comes to the zippers versus buttons debate.
I've got another story here, and this won't be too terribly long. So a couple years ago, Nintendo at E3, I believe, yeah, at E3, they announced the existence of Metroid Prime 4. However, I believe that trailer was just a logo reveal. So good job. You typed 4 next to Metroid Prime. And really, it's been radio silent since then. Until just recently, looking at this, it was like last Friday, Nintendo came out and said, yeah, so about that, we picked a bad horse. The developer that we initially went with didn't deliver us a product that we felt was up to the level of quality that we wanted. We don't know who that developer is, but it will probably come out. And what they are doing instead of releasing that bad game or canceling it is that they have moved the project over to Retro Studios. Retro Studios being the Austin, Texas based studio that did the initial Metroid Prime games and also worked on the Donkey Kong Country 3D reboot things on the Wii, and then, you know, up to Tropical Freeze on the Wii U. So who knows when we're going to see that, because they're going to be starting from square zero, but the series is coming home, and I guess people who are really, really excited about this game have equal reasons to be both dismayed and excited.
Yeah. I can't imagine that a handover like that goes amicably enough for there to be usable pieces of the game tossed over the fence, as it were, especially if they weren't happy with what existed.
Yeah, I have no idea if, like, they're going to be changing the story or the overall arc of it. Like, I don't know. If it's a complete teardown, they might as well do that and let retro build it from the beginning without baggage of an of a previous iteration, right?
So I can't help but wonder, though, how bad the game was, considering that this is, you know, that they looked at Metroid Other M and were like, yeah, that looks all right.
Maybe it's a once bitten, twice shy kind of thing. Maybe they said, yeah, we don't want another one of those. We don't want another one of those on our hands.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it's great, it was a brilliant business move. And if it sucks, then what were they thinking? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Really no way of knowing. I don't even know why I picked this story, because I don't even care for Metroid Prime. It just seemed like a big story.
Is there precedent for this happening anywhere else? Like big, big developer handovers in midstream?
Oh, I'm positive, yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I believe it.
No, it happens.
I mean, usually they just end up on Gearbox, right?
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. This one was mine, so I will ask the people, the nice people, the question, which is, so every series, no matter how beloved, has a black sheep. One entry that is maligned, that is considered to be the worst, or, I mean, if we want to say in less extreme terms, not the best, right? So I ask people, what series black sheep do you stick up for? What do you go to bat for? And so this is tough, because usually I read the first one, but I also read the question. Dennis, what does Nathan say?
Yeah, I like that. Nathan says Assassin's Creed Revelations. I suppose the level of malignity is up for debate, but people generally seem down on the Desmond story and the weird supernatural bits. But all of that worked for me. I love the break from the ancient culture and the weird over-the-top intrigue in the sci-fi present. Overall, just love the two in-between games. More than those before and more than those after.
Hmm. I think Revelations is the one where Desmond is like trapped on like a cyber island inside his mind.
Yeah, because the series up to that point sets up pretty hard, like, hey, this is the Animus is getting into him.
Yes.
Or it's doing something to him.
And specifically, like, it is showing him memories of somebody else who got like unmoored from their body and got trapped in the system. And like, mm-hmm. I think the meta plot or the present day plot in Revelations had that other person come and like confront him. I forget the substance of it. But yeah, like instead of having the stuff, in the, like the villa, like you had in Two or Brotherhood, then you had that kind of abstract thing.
Did he ever actually become an assassin?
Desmond?
Yeah,
I think there are a couple of times where you end up stabbing somebody, I think.
Okay, because it seemed like I played some of one, and then I think a good deal of Unity, maybe. And like, it's clearly setting that up, but then I know it seemed like they had some place they were wanting the story to go, and then people just despised Desmond so much that I kind of wondered how they wound that down.
I think they wound it down in 3. The one that takes place in America. Yeah, I remember being super excited for Revelations because it's set in Istanbul, which is like Istanbul in the, not the Middle Ages, but in the Renaissance. Amazing city, huge just beautiful architecture. Like, you want to be there. But then, like, I think halfway through, you go to this really bland underground cave city. It was like, man, let me run around Istanbul, please. Oh, well. Let's see, David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, I have two. First is Dark Souls 2.
Ding.
No matter how many people hate everything about it, I feel it has a great gameplay and a deeply psychological story. Second is Resident Evil 6. The story is crazy, of course, but the way they tell the story with all the characters is awesome. Plus, the gameplay is, to me, amazing. These two games I absolutely love.
Yeah, Lindsay is, I think, pandering to me a little bit, because I will go to bat for both of those. Yeah. Dark Souls 2, enough has been spilled about that. And RE6, we've talked about that quite a bit here. I think if you go into RE6 understanding that it is not to be taken seriously, then it's a little bit easier to swallow.
Yeah. At least by time played, it is a dark horse that we appreciate.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, it plays fine. It's not like it's bad in your hands either, you know?
It still amazes me, though, that apparently we learned last week everyone except me played through it without using like the headshot button.
Oh, I used it. I just didn't. I didn't recognize it as a headshot button. I thought I saw it as an oh shit button. It manifests differently for different characters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Greg says, I always really enjoyed Phantasy Star 3. Perhaps it's because I didn't play the series back in the day, but first played them through emulation when I was in grad school in the late 90s. However, while I can understand why the fans of the series really didn't like Phantasy Star 3, I thought it was one of the best in the series. The graphics were good, the music was awesome, and the timeline premise of the plot where you picked your child to play as, and that determined your status, some plot elements, and the ending was very cool and ahead of its time. It's not toward the last one-third of the game you realize how it ties into the earlier Phantasy Star games, but it's not the only RPG to do that. I always thought it doesn't deserve its bad reputation. I've never played it, and any research that I did into the prevailing opinions about Phantasy Star 3, I did back in the summer of 2016 when we covered 4 for Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yeah, I don't have any point of reference on the series to hold it up to either, unfortunately.
Yeah. I can't comment any further on it, so I will not attempt to.
Thus, I take Greg's word as law.
Yep. It is so ruled. Dennis, what does Javier say?
He says Metal Gear Solid 5. It's unfortunate that it's so looked down upon for its lack of story, cutscenes, and instead getting cassettes, but I legitimately had some of the best times playing it.
I think that might be, this is a bit of a strange thing, because people who are not fans of Metal Gear Solid love 5 because it plays so well. and I don't know that I've heard any people that I know who like Metal Gear Solid games generally say that 5 was the worst in the series.
It's the internet. I'm sure there's a subgroup out there that hates it.
Oh my gosh.
Like, does anyone even like normally not fans? Like, I feel like no one could not hate the second half.
Yeah, I think that I can only speak for myself and the conversations I've had with a handful of other people. It's seen as regrettable, but yeah, I don't know. I retweeted an amazing thing. Somebody screenshotted two MAGA chuds or Gamergate people talking to each other and desperately trying to convince themselves and each other that Metal Gear Solid as a series is not political. getting down into like real parsing, like, well, it's more historical, or diplomacy isn't political, or, you know, like in Metal Gear Solid 3 they talk about the Cold War, but like, hey guys, I need you to cool off for just like a second, please.
Now I'd be interested to know, like, clearly that's bullshit, but like I'd be interested to know, because obviously I have a data point of one, like, what tends to be the overall kind of like message or whatever of this series?
Primarily, the futility of war, pacifism, okay. The shift from nations waging war to kind of private industry. Metal Gear Solid 2 had an awful lot to say, like, weirdly and like almost like in a premonition style way about kind of the post-truth era and ultimately what would become meme warfare. Broadly across the entire series is a message of anti-nuclear proliferation, which you could see somebody, you know, from Japan being pretty into. Not to paint with too broad of a brush, but yeah, like these two randos, and this isn't like an op-ed that I saw on Kotaku or something,
right?
But two randos trying to convince themselves that somebody from Japan making a game about American soldiers is not necessarily commenting on American politics or world politics in general is really, really funny.
Oh, here we go. I'm looking at negative reviews on Steam. And one of the negative reviews is no toggle auto run button configurable. So take that.
Man, people are just Steam reviews. Like, if you want to go and just get a real like cross section of single issue voters, Steam reviews are the way to go. although maybe an auto run toggle might be an accessibility thing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like if you're not able to hold down on the stick, I could see that being an issue.
Or if you're playing on PC, definitely like carpal tunnel could be a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I came around.
De novo ruins every experience.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't either.
Let's see here. David, what does Mike say?
Mike says, Prince of Persia, Warrior Within. Yes, 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 the soundtrack is awful, and the particularly female character model is cringeworthy. But it is really fun installment in the series. The time travel story is inventive, the platforming's fantastic, and the combat is 1,000 times better than the boring and repetitive blue or red enemy combat in Sands of Time. I fully acknowledge the game's shortcoming, but I feel it often gets maligned as unplayable when it's far better than that. And while I'm at it, I'd bet money that if you put Rocksteady's logo on Arkham Origins, most people wouldn't even know the difference from the other games in this series.
Oh, guys, Ben just logged on.
Yeah, whoa. And he's I'm sorry. I have to edit it out of the podcast, but it's nothing but incredibly loud static. Weird. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that was quite the racist rant.
I'm a racist.
I don't know why I'm a racist. That was quite the obscenity laden rant.
Yeah.
I think I'm so used to using the word racist in front of rant. I don't know the last time I've used rant without that preceding descriptor.
Doesn't sound right.
Huh.
that's the true sadness of our present era. America has forgot how to rant about things other than race.
Jeez.
So I do have to contest though the particularly female, like the prince's character model is pretty cringeworthy all on its own.
It's all cringeworthy. I think that Mike felt the need to call that out because Warrior Within, the one of the main antagonists,
metal G-string?
Yeah, like the metal bikini or whatever, which is just gratuitous. Yeah,
don't watch The Last Jedi. Or don't damn it.
What?
Don't watch Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, Ben would probably agree with you on that first part as well.
Oh, yeah. No, so it's funny that Warrior Within gets that. So Warrior Within gets the reputation because of the metal bikini or whatever, when the two princes, the two thrones or whatever, straight up has toplessness in it.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's rated mature. So is Warrior Within. But yeah, there's nudity in the cutscenes, which seems very strange to me given where the series started out. Yeah.
Prince of Persia, God of War. That's an interesting subtitle.
Weird. Okay. Well, that's strange, but I'll go with it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Literally the number one result for me on Warrior Within is an article on women's clothing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. My only complaints with Worry Within are they basically just come down to taste. You know, I just think that its visual presentation is pretty tasteless. But
namely having it.
I don't want to say that. I don't want to take a stance that I have taste. However, yeah, like there's cool stuff. Like there's the crazy time golem that chases you. Because you've messed mm-hmm. with you've messed with causality enough that time itself has manifested to come at you. Yeah.
So I do have to say there couple weeks back there was a long-running discussion on the games channel about Soul Calibur, you know, whatever Roman numeral we're up to.
I think we're on 6 now.
Maybe. And just the various I guess guest characters throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say the prince would be a really good guest character for a Soul Calibur game.
For sure.
Man, I'm surprised that hasn't happened now that you say it.
Yeah. And it has like a little teleport move for time travel.
Exactly.
Yeah. That'd be good. It'd be nice if they could get that series off the ground again.
Yeah. I mean, what was the feelings on the, I don't know, like, reboot or whatever. I mean, I kind of enjoyed it.
So the 2008 one, I think there were a lot of complaints that it was especially easy because you had a kind of in a BioShock Infinite way an all-powerful companion character who would like rescue you if you missed a platform or
You literally could not die.
Yeah, but like you really couldn't die in any of the other ones either, because you had time travel. So that didn't bother me. I thought it was nice. I thought it was really stylish, and I liked the play of it. What I didn't like was the dungeon structure where you had to fight to the end and then fight your way back out. I thought that that was kind of lazy padding kind of stuff. Like weirdly, I kind of didn't mind. What is it? Prince of Persia, Forgotten Sands.
Oh, the reboot.
Yeah, it was like the reboot of the reboot. This is the one that came out kind of around the time of the Prince of Persia movie, weirdly enough, that I think was either like a direct sequel or a retelling of Sands of Time.
It was very Pixar.
Was it?
Yeah, I played a good portion of it.
The Forgotten Sands or the...
I think no, maybe that was just the Prince of Persia.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of the Prince of Persia, the 2008 one, because that one like was especially colorful and had kind of like a weird cell shading.
Yeah, there we go. I'm just confusing the titles.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. Jack writes. Oh, sorry, no. Ollie writes. I'm not sure if it's a black sheep so much as a hidden gem, but I will go to bat for Oddworld Stranger's Wrath as being one of the best games of its generation that no one bought.
Hmm.
Yeah. I never played that because that was one of those ones from a weird era when it was all Xbox exclusive. When Munch's Odyssey and Stranger's Wrath were both Xbox exclusive. And by the time I got my Xbox, I don't think I could get a hold of that.
Hmm.
Yeah. I definitely think the black sheep of that series would be Munch's Odyssey, though, where they took the kind of meticulous puzzle platformer of the Abe's Odyssey games and like made it a collectathon kind of 3D platformer kind of thing, like a mascot platformer. Yeah,
huh.
The Oddworld Stranger's Wrath is a departure more than anything. It's a first person shooter where you have like a slingshot that shoots little critters, and like the different critters have different effects. Like different kinds of ammunition.
Yeah. At the very least, I feel like the main character ranks up there for one of the most badass looking characters in games.
That's pretty good. let's see, Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack says, I spent a ton of time going through Mass Effect Andromeda. I enjoyed the way the worlds articulated, mostly because I actually enjoyed Dragon Age Inquisition's huge zones. I also enjoyed the different feel that a non-established human presence in those systems brought to a series that relied on its own familiarity, and the characters just worked for me. I was really sad when the whole debacle with the studio went down, and the way the game was just left for dead, when there was clearly available opportunities for good and additive DLC. Really disappointing.
It sucks that... You know, so I haven't played this game, so I can't speak to the rest of the stuff. But the fact that the entire conversation that sunk that game, you know, just from a casual observer's point of view, was that it's unacceptable for there to be animation glitches in a video game. like that. That was as deep as I saw any of the criticism really, really go when people were speaking about it, you know.
It's another milk fight. They're still salty about the ending of Mass Effect 3, and they're just going to shit all over the first thing wrong with the next one.
Yeah. Weird. I've got Andromeda sitting there. I just have been waiting for an excuse to start it. Oh, well, David, what does Casey say?
Casey says, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. The general consensus seems to be that it's a terrible Banjo game. I think too many people were hung up on the Banjo branding. I didn't get into the series until The Tower was released in 2008, and I adore it. The level of creativity and open world exploration would not be rivaled for me until I started playing Minecraft almost 3 years later.
This game owns bones. Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. I hate the other Banjo-Kazooie games, but like... Just the kind of iterative experimentation of designing your own little vehicle, you know, putting different bits and bobs and, you know, trying to make it match whatever the stage was going to ask you to do. It was great. Great, I tell you.
I'm not familiar with this at all. So what is the gimmick? Like, how does this get out of the...
So it's like a vehicle combat kind of game. You know, so it's Banjo branded, you know, like you're driving around as Banjo the Shitty Bear. But you've got like a garage and like you're collecting parts to kind of give your vehicle new capabilities to get through the stages.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I gotta say, yeah, a lot of these, like, I put so much credit on people that are willing to, like, take risks and go into new genres. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Let's see here. Michael says, I'm guilty of playing and liking DMC Devil May Cry. The reboot that gave Dante an emo boy band haircut. Emo boy band haircut. There we go. Black sheep of the DMC family for sure. Oh, my friend. Devil May Cry 2. Please, I understand people don't like new things, but let us not lose perspective.
He said the one that he would go to bat for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just... I guess, yeah.
I'm going to duck in here because although Devil May Cry 2 is not strictly speaking my answer because it is just a horrible game, I do think it's worth pointing out that some of the gimmicks with the airborne gun combat that became standard in later games were first in DMC 2.
I don't know. I don't have a huge perspective on the series, but let's see here. Sorry, I didn't mean for that to peter out. We've talked about DMC quite a bit. You uttered a booyah about that. Is that your answer, Dennis?
Absolutely, my answer. And per your thought, I think we've covered it. I mean, go back and search for DMC and anything in the past however many years, and you will get my thoughts in full.
So I'm kind of surprised that Casey's answer didn't prime a different game for you.
What do you mean?
I was expecting Dennis, you to go with Jak Combat Racing.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that one as a black sheep. I guess it's a different genre and was kind of the last gasp for Jak. But I wasn't thinking about it that way.
What about Jak 2?
Jak 2, I'll go to bat for. Yeah, I mean that was another one where they took a well done but fairly simple platformer. And really, yes, it was a Me Too into the GTA world, but it was certainly ambitious. So I liked it just fine.
Yeah.
I think my feelings are much, much stronger for DMC than for Jak 2.
Yeah.
I think Jak 3, at least for me, kind of, redeems, Jak 2 in that it sort of, you know, works the trilogy into having kind of a character arc.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see here. That was me. So Dennis, what does Chris say?
Chris says, sure, it's probably not what people were dying for after Fallout and Fallout 2, but I find Fallout Tactics to be a pretty solid real-time strategy combat game with, well, tactics. I personally enjoy it way more than Fallout 3.
And Fallout would never suddenly change genres again.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm like quibbling with people's answers. Fallout Tactics feels like a dark horse, not a black sheep. It's a subtle distinction, I know.
Yeah, I mean, one's a horse, one's a sheep.
Yeah.
Look, yeah. Are we splitting dark horses and black sheep here?
I think we are. We're splitting fur. So let's see here. David, what does Austin say?
Austin says, I'm a Bioshock 2 defender, through and through. See the WAF episode on Bioshock 2 for why this game is amazing and debatably the best in the series.
Hell yeah. Bioshock 2 is incredibly good.
It is. I never finished it, I will admit. However, I did enjoy what I played.
Yeah. I feel like I've just been immersed in Bioshock for the past like 5 years, 6 years, something like that. And two is the one that has not been in it.
Oh, come on. Our society is not that dystopian.
I suppose. Immersed in Bioshock Rapture. It's funny. See?
I got you.
Yeah. Yeah, BioShock 2 owns Bones. That's good. So Dennis, you gave your answer in DMC. Did you have another one that you wanted to lay out?
No, I mean, David picked my alternate as well. So yeah. It's like you guys know me or something.
David, how about you?
Sure. So I think I'd probably have to go with Resident Evil 6.
Okay.
Although Austin's kind of reminding me, I don't know if how across the board BioShock Infinite is, but at least on the network, I'd be in the minority in saying I think it's far and away the best of the series.
Get out. No, that's I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's Resident Evil 3. I was prompted to put this up, you know, just in thinking about how good the remake of RE2 is. And you know, for as good as that is, it also incorporates a lot of elements that I think make Resident Evil 3 incredibly good, and kind of like weirdly negates the need for an RE3 remake in a similar kind of vein. But looking back at the original trilogy, like 3 is where they really hit their stride, but it's kind of looked down on because it reuses some assets for one small portion of the game, on its way to going and being its own thing entirely.
What was 3? Not to be snarky at all, just what was kind of its...
3 was Nemesis.
Okay. Yeah.
So you played as Jill, and it's not like a sequel, but like part of it takes place before the events of RE2, and then she's knocked out and wakes up after the events of RE2. Yeah. And it's kind of a little bit more action heavy. It includes a lot of combat niceties, has the ammo mixing system, and obviously the Nemesis system, you know, where he'll chase you around. Yeah, RE3 is my answer. Also, like a side one, like we just recorded the episode of Watch Out for Fireballs about Mario 2 today.
Oh,
and that,
sure.
That is another one that I will go to bat for as well.
Man, what's that? What am I remembering about what am I not remembering about the history? Was it a completely different game that got reskinned?
Yeah, it was called Doki Doki Panic.
There we go. Yeah. Yep.
We talked about that in the episode.
There you go.
Yeah.
I really want to know
confused what with Doki Doki Universe, which is hot garbage,
or Doki Doki Literature Club, which is profoundly upsetting.
So what did you guys get into? What was the original plot that necessitated, vegetable throwing based adventure?
Yeah, just the family was sucked into a magic storybook.
Yeah. That's disappointing.
Man, if I had a nickel for every time that happened.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for participating in this. If you would like to get in on this action in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away for a while, so... What you been playing noteworthy here recently?
Yeah, man, I feel like it has been a season of deep dives for me.
Yeah.
So I've gotten super duper into games that I've talked about before. So by way of quick hits, I am now in the global top 0.011% for Trackmania Turbo.
Oh, really?
And steadily grinding for that top 0.00. Yeah, I guess at that point it'll be 0.009%. Trying to get into that third decimal. So that's been fun. And I've been playing a ton of Atlas Reactor as well. After all of the uncertainty surrounding the developer getting bought and whether or not it was just going to kind of disappear, it seems to be growing again, which is exciting because I love that game so freaking much and it is so unique and everyone should play it.
Are you tracking that like by player base stats?
Yeah, player base, after steadily declining for the past 6 months or so, is now growing at about 12-13%, last I checked. And that's just looking at the Steam logins. It doesn't count people launching directly from the Glyph launcher.
Yeah.
So just that is my multiplayer game of choice right now. I finished Gravity Rush 2.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's when you're playing with the boys, right?
It is. I'm glad I didn't finish it with the boys.
Oh, no.
So we were playing. I could kind of tell I was close to the end. And I just wanted to power through, you know, it was late. So they had gone to bed and I was just like, they're not going to care. I'll finish it and can run around and do side missions if I really want to, you know, play more with them. Cause those are the fun stuff for them. And the final boss turns into like a RE6 style unholy blob abomination that's taken over a building made out of a person you know's faces all like molten together in these weird ways. And you defeat it by bursting your friend out of what is apparently a pregnant belly of this monster.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's intense.
So it goes full Earthbound.
It gets warped.
This is the team that made the Siren games.
So overall, the story feels just like it did at the end of the first game, which is like it's cut off in the middle. And they've got, you know, they got 6 million threads running 6 million different directions. And I think if you choose to read it as like a comic book that's just setting up all these plot lines to deliver on, that's fine. Except this is coming out once every several years and probably never again now,
right?
Based on how the second one did. Not that they were worried about tying up loose ends, but they certainly went the opposite direction. That said, you know, the standard power of friendship rules apply.
Right.
And outside of the final boss fight being a bit of a slog, or I should say a major slog, like it's probably a 10-minute ordeal where you're literally just flying around trying to hit buttons. Which when I say hit buttons, I mean gouge out the beast's many eyes from its many different faces.
So again, this is a game where you're running gravity errands for people.
Yeah, this is the same game where you're chasing down little girls' red balloons and you're taking old men for a walk and like, you know, it's super sweet up until it just felt like they got to the end boss and were just like, yeah, end bosses need to be super metal, right? Like, drop the double bass drum and let's go.
I mean, the kids have to learn about body horror sometime.
Yeah. I dodged that particular bullet made out of writhing fingers.
Oh, geez. Kids can have nightmares for like no reason too. Yeah. Adults too. I've got them all the time, but like kids especially.
Yeah. So it came out of nowhere. Cause up to that point, like the closest thing to like scary had been the idea that, I won't get spoilery, but that basically the antagonist is doing something horrible to get someone back that he loves. So it's like, you know, I can buy that. And then it just flies off the rails in the final boss fight and then sends a thousand different questions out as the credits roll. But such is the way of Gravity Rush, and just the overall mechanics and feel of the game is still absolutely wonderful. Like it never gets old to gravity slide up a building or to just float around, or the game just feels good to play. So I think those are the three big ones that I've talked about on the show before that I've kind of finished or advanced in some significant way. I've also been playing the Dreams beta.
Oh, shit. Really? Yeah.
And so this is the essentially the 3D successor by Media Molecule to Little Big Planet. And I looked it up before I came on. Like, technically, you're not supposed to talk too much about specific experiences, but I'm not going to share anything that wasn't in like their demos that they've done of it.
Right.
Getting it on the beta, it's still very much a work in progress. That's totally fine. It's just the creator tools, not the actual, playable levels, campaign levels of the game, which I'm so excited to see what a professional team can do with it, because the things that just people are making in the creator studio are mind blowing. It's so cool. And it's less on the front of levels, even. The things that I've enjoyed the most so far are seeing all the sculptures that people have done. And so there's people or there's teams of people that are just using the sculpting tools to create these amazing 3D models and stage them and kind of set them up. And literally the entire level is just open up the level and look at this cool thing that someone designed with the exact same tools you have at your fingertips.
It's just a tableau.
Yeah. So I have the same feeling that I had way back in college when I first downloaded Blender, which is just like, this is something incredible that is at my fingertips, to use. It's been really cool to just browse and explore, and they have a fairly good tutorial system to kind of bring you up to speed. But I got to the end, and this was last night. It's a miracle I'm standing right now. Last night, I probably started up Dreams around 10. I'd played a couple days before and got to a point in the tutorials where I'm like, okay, I feel like I've got my feet under me. I'll mess around with a little bit of creation. And then I noticed that I think it's every day or maybe every week they have game jams and they post a theme and everyone makes levels based on the theme and you tag it with the theme. And then there's a voting round where everyone plays and votes on the games from the game jam to get favorites. And it's just rotating. And I saw the prompt and I was like, oh, I've got a clever idea for that. And that, well, based on what I know, that probably shouldn't be too hard to do. Famous last words.
How many hours?
That was at 11 at 3:45 a.m. Jen got up because Milo was crying about something. Oh, and I hear down the stairs, babe, are you still up? I gotta publish. There's only 3 hours left before the game jam ends. So I got sucked in so hard. But I tell you what, I think I've pulled those long nights before and you get lost and stuff and you just stay up way later than you think.
Yeah.
I felt a completely different energy going to bed when I had spent all that time creating something
than
when I was going to bed after just consuming something.
Yeah.
And for as interactive as most games are, you're still essentially consuming something that someone else has produced. Mm-hmm. Whereas I just felt so different, like just the energy was different. It was really cool.
Yeah.
From engaging those creative juices,
pulling something out of your head instead of putting something into it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what the difference was. And to get in there, and I watched enough of the tutorials to be dangerous, but they're not finished and they're not comprehensive. And so you just got to kind of go in there and screw around with it. And figuring all that out and feeling like I found some relatively elegant solutions to what I was trying to accomplish felt incredibly good. Although I'm sure any programmer worth their salt would look at my setup and just start laughing.
Right, right.
Hey, it worked for me. It did what I wanted it to do. And I published it to the game jam. So that just felt really, really good.
I have so many questions about this, and I know you probably won't be able to answer them. Just for the basis of first principles.
I mean, no one's checking us.
I suppose, but I'll, you agreed to something. You agreed to something, and I don't want to, I feel weird like defending the honor of a company or whatever, but like, it's
so cool and jovial. I'll cut myself off before if I feel like I'm going anywhere too far. So, but let me be the decider of that versus you censoring yourself.
Yeah. So what kind of game do you make? Like, so I understand you're making something, and I've seen like stills and screenshots and stuff. Like when you make something, what is the thing that somebody else plays?
Oh man. Mostly so far it's platformers.
Okay.
In the same way, I think, what LBP was to Mario, like the original Mario Brothers. It feels like Dreams is to Super Mario 64.
Okay, so like through 3D platformers, like you're moving a little dude through 3D space. So it's not like a first person kind of thing.
It can be. That's the interesting thing is if you look at the original, Little Big Planet 1-3, people found ways to take it what was meant to be a 2D, 2.5D platformer.
Uh-huh.
With a relatively simple interface that was geared towards that kind of, hey, it's a 2D platformer, but there's three different planes and that's the end, and found a way to make first person shooters out of that. Like it was very rudimentary and it was very convoluted, but they found a way to make first person shooters in Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
They found a way to make, I built a tic-tac-toe game where literally you would move around and place X's and O's on a grid, mm-hmm. And it would score and go back and forth. I found a way to make with Little Big Planet 3 like a volleyball game.
Yeah.
A simulator with scoring and everything. And this just embraces that and runs with it to the nth degree, because now it is truly giving you the third dimension that everyone kind of play acted in Little Big Planet 3.
Yeah.
And so if you think about, you know, the community for Little Big Planet would clutch together these seemingly 3D bits with a platform not designed for it. Mm-hmm. And now they're being let loose wild on a platform that is designed for it. And that's the cool thing.
What's the kind of shopping or discoverability and just online looking at other people's creations? Like how is that experience? Like, are you able to surface cool stuff, or is it kind of like Mario Maker and that it is kind of a goddamn nightmare if you don't know exactly what you're looking for?
I feel like the stuff that's been, so you jump in and you can search if you want, but really the main way to browse is just scrolling through the ones that it populates for you. So there's a, you know, greatest hits list that we'll fill in. So far I've been happy with the stuff it's raised to me, and it does a good job bringing a mix of, hey, this is a platformer, this is just a model, this is a racing game, because I've seen a couple of those. Here's a first person shooter. The stuff that's getting raised and getting lots of likes and accolades, I think that's what it's based off of, is doing a fairly good job finding the right stuff for me.
Yeah.
I will say it's a little weird. They have something that like tries to tell you your personality, essentially. I think there's the idea is like, hey, we're going to be genius for video games.
Yeah.
We're going to be for video games what genius was for music. And I don't know how well that works yet, but TBD.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just, you know, the creativity on display is amazing, mm-hmm. as it was with the Little Big Planet games. And it feels like the gloves have been taken off in terms of letting people do what they've envisioned from the start. And I felt incredibly empowered to do my own thing as well.
Yeah. So I guess my other question would be, you know, 3D modeling is a really complex thing, even with a mouse and keyboard and a full interface or whatever. Like, how are you actually sculpting things in the world? Is it like, is it using move controllers? Is it, you know, are you kind of using the weird motion controls on the controller itself? Like how are you doing this?
Yeah. So therein lies my one gripe with what I've experienced so far. I'll start with a compliment. So the base mode is using your controller, your PS4 controller, effectively using motion controls as the mouse.
Okay.
And it works surprisingly well.
Do you need the eye camera to do that?
Yes, you would.
Okay.
So you need the PlayStation Eye, but that works really well. Like a high level of granularity, I never felt like I had trouble grabbing what I needed to grab. I imagine you just use the sticks to navigate if you don't have the eye camera.
Mm-hmm.
However, they also have, and again, placeholder being updated, they also have something for move controllers. And I think they've even, when they debuted it with move controllers. So this isn't a secret. The one problem is that all the axes are inverted. So if you, and inverted for me, I'll say, if you think about the way you can interact with the world when you move the move controller back and forth, you're either thinking of it as I am grabbing the level and moving the level when I move the controller, or that I'm representing my head and turning my head when I move the controller.
Okay.
And from VR and from all my other experiences doing anything, literally anything with the move controller, it has all been an approximation of your head.
Okay.
Dreams at this point treats it like it is grabbing the level and moving it. And they intentionally describe it as such in the tutorial for it. So they made a choice. This isn't just like a, you know, they didn't think about it,
mm-hmm.
but it is 100% completely counterintuitive to everything I've been trained to do so far
right.
in mouse controls and motion controls to this point in my life. It is maddening to the point of not being functional.
Ooh.
And the worst part is, so the move controller sense rotation on the Z axis. So if you like turn the controller like you would a doorknob,
It won't do that because it's tracking the globe on the
end. It does. It actually tracks it incredibly well.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Believe it or not. Yeah. I've looked at the controller. I don't know if it's oblong a little bit or what, but it's very impressive.
It might be like a gyro inside the thing itself.
That's likely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is reversed as well. Cause think about if you're tilting your head, rotating it Z axis, you know, left and right, that would cause one motion. But if you're grabbing something and turning it, that would cause the opposite motion. And when you're interacting with something with quote unquote normal controls, all those little rotations of your wrist, you kind of subconsciously process and adjust for, and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And you don't realize you're doing it in the moment, but because it feels intuitive, it's not a big deal because you just rotate back.
Right.
In this, all of a sudden, all those little motions are compounded because now it's rotating the opposite way when you're not even meaning to rotate it in the first place.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then your subconscious attempt to correct for it rotates it the wrong way even further. And so suddenly you're like 90 degrees plus off kilter, being like, what the hell am I looking at?
So just all of a sudden you're just wrapped around the axle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, I'm sure if I practice with it a bit, it would be fine. I'm sure there will be an invert button or more granular options in the final product. That's great. When that happens, everything that I've read in the forums and everything is that the motion controls are phenomenal.
Right.
It's like the way to sculpt. If you're going to sculpt, it's so empowering.
Yeah.
Works incredibly well in 3D space. And I'm looking forward to that, but I cannot interact with it the way I want to right now.
Eesh.
But holy shit, it's pretty cool.
It sounds like you're digging it.
Yeah, I really am. And I'm forsaking sleep for it in a big way. So,
yeah, nice.
So that's me.
Cool. I don't know that I have any additional questions, David, do you?
No, that sounds really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
My little imp poppet guy is green, by the way, but I could not find an option to make him look like a laser.
Yeah.
I will get there.
Maybe in time. Like the imp is your cursor that you interact with.
Yeah, your effective cursor. Yeah. Which they felt the need to make your base cursor basically clippy.
Yeah.
Without the tooltips, to their credit.
Okay, that's good. let's see here. I'm gonna go next. I only have one, but it's a bit of a doozy, which is the remake of Resident Evil 2.
All right.
Yeah.
Go on.
I went, got it like right when the store opened up on Friday. I had it beaten by around midnight on Friday, and then I did the second scenario on Saturday. So I...
Holy shit.
Yeah, I mainlined this game. That's not terribly impressive because each scenario is about 7 hours long. Like I tweeted screenshots of my results screen.
Is that if you kind of know what you're doing already?
A little bit, yeah. Like on the second one, it was actually kind of remarkable. You know, the second scenario is very similar to the first one. Like things are just kind of where you expect them to be. But even still, it ended up being about seven hours on the second go. I don't know if that's just because you do additional things at the end of the second scenario. I'm jumping all over the place and getting around myself. When I say second scenario, this is like Resident Evil 2, you know, the original one that came out in 1998, in that you can choose whether or not you want to, whether or not, I guess you can always choose not to play. You can choose to play as Leon or Claire, and each of them kind of has their own events that they go through, while still broadly hitting the same beats and solving, many of the same puzzles. This game is amazing. I like it quite a bit. I have some quibbles, mostly with some of the pacing around the middle, specifically when you go to the sewer. And I also kind of wish the second run was more distinct from the first. But wow, they nailed it, I think, in a way that... You know, there's a worry when you like an original game so much. Right. You know, Resident Evil 2, big, important game. It's an important part of my own kind of personal history with video games. You know, it was one of the first horror games I ever played. And those are obviously a pretty big deal for me, et cetera. And down the line, the worry would be that a remake would do a disservice or would provide poor service to the original. You know, will it, will it hew too closely or will it be too much of a departure? Ideally, what you want to get is something like what people call the remake, the 2002 remake of Resident Evil 1, which plays very similarly to the original, but adds so much additional content, whether it's, you know, new story stuff and a new boss with, you know, Lisa Trevor, kind of new mechanics like with the Crimson Heads, the zombies that come back and are more dangerous if you don't either behead them or set them on fire.
Oh, I didn't realize that was an original feature.
No. I mean, so the Crimson Heads were not in the original game. That is an original game and an original feature in the remake.
I mean, I had heard about them. I had always assumed those had always been the game.
Yeah, it's a real big deal. What you end up getting with Resident Evil 2 that I was super impressed with is something that, like, kind of pulls from all the major eras of Resident Evil. So, like, what you have is, you know, kind of backtracking heavy, you know, space unraveling that you do in the, you know, the original Resident Evil games, you know, from 1 to 3 and then Code Veronica, you know, where you have kind of a big space with, you know, some doors that are locked and puzzles that you have to solve, and you have to go find the keys to those puzzles and get the information that you need and deal with the threats along the way. I love that shit, but I understand a little bit why it fell out of fashion, because, you know, not everybody is kind of down with backtracking. I like untangling a space. It is one of my favorite things about those kind of games. The other era that it pulls from is kind of that, you know, middle period from 2005 up through, I mean, honestly, like 2013, when you had Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6, which were more action heavy. This is an incredibly fluid game. Just in terms of being an over the shoulder shooter, you know, things move very quickly. The enemies are very durable because you're fighting zombies again. And you just have to kind of rise to what it's asking of you, to the point where it's, you know, pretty difficult in terms of being an action game. I tried playing it on the hardcore difficulty, just to see. Like, no, it's probably not for me, which is fine.
You are weak.
I am a weak human is what I am. But yeah,
I believe the technical term is get good.
Yeah, and I dislike that quite a bit.
I know.
But no, like even the standard difficulty is, you know, difficult and harrowing and kind of pulling from that first era. You really have to conserve your ammo. You only have so much of it, and they do have the gunpowder system from RE3. It's in there, but that only does so much. Especially when you're also trying to ration your health pickups as well. Like, you can find yourself up shit creek from a resource perspective in a way that just kind of doesn't happen in the later RE games. And from RE7, I think that it just feels especially modern, from kind of interface affordances that it makes for you down to, I think, so there's still some campiness to it. Right. It is high melody. You know, there's definitely some melodrama inherent in, you know, a story that sets people up to say, you leave me, I'll just slow you down. There's plenty of that, and it gets super goofy in some ways. But you don't have characters who are either like crazy over the top, you know, action hero quip men folks like Leon is in 4 and 6, you know, but you also don't have like the weird, dreamy, disaffected Lynchian zombie protagonist like you have in 1 through 3, where people are kind of delivering stuff in this kind of disaffected way. Instead, it feels really gritty. It's incredibly gory in a way that I feel is additive, because like the main villain in this, one William Birkin, I don't think you can do the kind of body horror that is inherent with him, and also, you know, inherent in a zombie story in general, without getting just really fucking grimy like this is.
At a fidelity that the previous or original game could not.
Right. They're just like, where you had like, there was blood, but it was like, you know, sprite decals that were mm-hmm. spouting up out of somebody, you know. It is showing what previous games could kind of only imply from the technical level. So yeah, it's this great intersection between all of these elements, and it kind of takes stuff that was present in the original Resident Evil 2. Like Mr. X. You have probably seen a lot of memes of Mr. X, the tyrant in the big overcoat, you know, kind of bursting his way through a door and punching your character set to DMX's X Gon' Give It To You. Like, at a certain point in like in the scenarios, Mr. X, he is set loose in the station and you are going to be running from him the entire time. You can unload everything you have into him and he will like take a knee for a moment. And you're going to try and get away from him. You can do it for a while, but you can hear him from multiple rooms away or even from different floors, just like the thud, thud, thud of the footsteps, knowing that he is nearby. It is so good, and that's part of the reason why, like I said earlier, that like Resident Evil 3, you know, that this obviates the need for a Resident Evil 3 remake, because they take a lot of what was really, really cool about the Nemesis and introduce it in the, you know, the figure of Mr. X, that pursuit based you know, implacable enemy that you cannot really take down.
And how is that handled in the, I guess, non-remake version?
So in the non-remake version, Mr. X only appears in the second scenario. So whoever you choose second, they're the only person who sees him. It's interesting because he will follow you a little bit, but it is entirely scripted. So like there's a famous scene where like, you're going to be running from him and you think that you're safe because you're in an area, you know, like just you've gotten through. No monster will ever follow you through a door in Resident Evil, except now they do in the remake. But you know, you just assumed I'm through a door, I'm safe. You go and solve a puzzle and then boom, guess who just Kool-Aid manned his way through this wall and picked you up and is choke slamming you. It's Mr. X because he burst through the wall. So it, like he only showed up in a few.
Technically not a door.
it's the door. Our real friends were the real treasure was the doors we made along the way. So that's the way it would pop up then. But here, you know, he will just follow you around and like, in you know, rank and file zombies as well will burst their way through doors. Like when you close the door behind you, it's only a, you know, shelter temporarily until they break through. So even then there is a sense of pursuit and overwhelm as they're coming at you.
So this apparently happens in a world where no one has steel doors.
You know, at least no steel doors that can stand up to a zombie.
Steel doors can stand up to my plot.
Yeah. They can't really feel pain. So there's nothing really stopping them from giving it their all. Graphically, it's a very beautiful game, as you would expect from something that came out in 2019. However, it is especially heartwarming from a nostalgia point of view to go back through these familiar areas and see the ways that they sharpen them up. The station in the original felt, you know, kind of uninhabited. Like there was obvious evidence of struggle, but like it didn't. You know, it didn't seem like anybody was like taking shelter there. You know, here though, like the main hall of the station, like it's full of hospital beds and like triage centers and, you know, trash cans full of bloody rags. Like this was a place that the city said, everybody come here. And you can see like where people, you know, tried to enact the act of surviving in this catastrophe. Strewn about, even though you're coming to it well after everybody has turned. But yeah, like those details abound. There's a cool system where you can pick up planks. And while you're in the station, you can use them to board up windows. You have a limited number of planks that you can use, and definitely not enough to board up the windows. But you know, which ones you choose to seal up will determine how dangerous that area is in the future when you go through it. It's just full of a bunch of really cool details like that and cool little mini systems in addition to just the really satisfying shooting and just the overall sense of tension that you get from enemies that just will not stay down.
So really dumb question, but how much of the game takes place in this station?
So it's about like it's a third, a third, a third. The first third takes place in the station. The second third is the part that I don't really care for tremendously, but it is in kind of the sewers and water treatment kind of area beneath the station and the city itself. And that leads to what the final third is, which is the Umbrella Lab. Kind of beneath Raccoon City itself.
Okay.
Yeah. That's probably not exactly a third, but that's just the way I kind of conceptualize it.
Sure.
Yeah. Any other questions? I feel like I've said what I would like to say about it. I'm going to be streaming it again this coming weekend. I had to stop myself from playing it.
Well, you just intercepted my question and ran it back for a touchdown.
Oh yeah.
I was gonna say, so like, do you need some distance before you're ready to play it again? Yeah. Or
no, I really want to play more of it. I've been doing a little bit of the fourth survivor, which is kind of the mercenary mini game that you can do, like where you start near the end of the game and you have to work your way back up to the surface. With a limited number of resources. It's like a combat time trial kind of thing. I'm having fun doing that, but like, I don't know. So I did Leon first and Claire second, for my initial playthrough for basically no reason other than I wanted to see Leon. I like Leon a lot as a character, and his interpretation and Claire's interpretation as being like especially young and watching the way that they kind of grow to match the, to match the occasion is really satisfying. And I had to stop myself from doing Claire A, Leon B. I'm saving that for the stream.
Nice. Do you expect to find any differences then?
Yeah, I do.
Like any Easter eggs thrown in or stuff that you wouldn't expect from the original game?
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. It's neat because like the remake, the 2002 remake of the original game, they use your knowledge of, you know, 1998's Resident Evil 2 to like set up an expectation that something is going to happen. And then boom, hit you with a left hook when you're not expecting it. So like, oh, they opted not to go with the liquor appearing there. Oh, the liquor's going to appear here later. And then on the second run through, you think, well, the liquor's not going to be here. And then boom, the liquor's there. Hi, I'm back. A liquor's a monster. I'm not referring to spirits, spiritus beverages.
That's how I feel about liquor, the spirit, all the time. It's like, I don't expect it to be there. And then it just bowls me boom, over. Yeah.
No, bourbon, the brownest of the brown liquors. Mm. Yeah.
I'm drinking some Jefferson's tonight and it is delicious.
Mm. Neat. Yeah. So that's my story. I like Resident Evil 2 quite a bit. I think, man, it's been a long time since I've just mowed down on a game like this, you know?
Good stuff.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Yeah. So I've pretty much, just been playing a whole lot of Desolate.
Okay.
According to the game's like inner counter or whatever, I'm like 75% through the story.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting. I think it definitely manages to actually have a compelling story that separate from, you know, just imitating the general Stalker plot. So I've really, really actually been enjoying that a lot more than I expected. And there's still a couple of plot twists that haven't been resolved at all. So I'm interested to see how those go.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, I think I mentioned it very briefly, but there's a couple points in the game where you'll see just these massive flying whales sort of floating through the sky.
Okay.
And I'm interested to see where that goes, because my understanding is those do become a meaningful thing at some point.
Okay.
Wait a second. Are you just playing Dishonored?
Yeah, I think you might just be playing Dishonored.
Yeah, this game definitely has some moments where it has some very Dishonored vibes. I do have to say. So other than that, I unlocked the ability to... You eventually unlock the ability to kind of fight on behalf of the various factions and gain reputation. Most notably, the kind of locals who... faction allows you to retake various locations from the enemy, which is kind of nice, sort of from the same vein as like Fallout 4, where it's kind of neat seeing the wasteland become much less dangerous as you you know kind of civilize it.
Right.
Although strangely enough, they having a location like a city be populated doesn't turn off the jump scares. So
I mean, is it just somebody like popping out offering you a scone? Like,
so yeah, so it's base. So it's no. Usually not, at least. You know, there are quite a lot of confectionery in this game, strangely enough.
like Little Debbie? like what are you?
Yeah, so it's got a... It's got, like, 140 different crafting recipes, and the vast majority of those are food.
Okay, I can see that, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, actually, to the point that there's one that... I'm kind of researching. So both in the Stalker game and now in this game, there's reference to there's a food called Tourist's Breakfast.
Okay. And
some search around online reveals that that's apparently actually a thing. However, it's not clear at all. I haven't been able to figure out exactly what it is.
It's like a canned something, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So like that's just interesting purely from a, you know, here's a thing that clearly is a cultural thing that didn't quite translate.
Yeah.
But I know. Oh yeah. So. But where I was actually going with that is, no, you'll be walking through, like, a fully populated city and just all of a sudden have, like, a creepy little girl appear in front of you and scream.
Okay.
Which is kind of funny. So that's actually one of the plot elements that I'm interested to see if they ever actually do resolve. Because you eventually learn girl's identity. However, it's not clear if you ever actually do anything about her.
She's been dead for so many years.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, I mean, other than that, the gameplay definitely reaches a point where you start kind of hitting your stride and becoming, you know, much more powerful. To the point where the balance of power definitely shifts in your favor. Most notably by this point, when I'm crouching, so like sneaking, I can basically see a sort of outline of any enemies within a certain number of feet, even through walls.
Oh, that's useful.
And any injuries I sustain, I will regenerate, which is kind of explained by the fact that, you know, this is, you know, explicitly an area where you're being exposed to, like, radiation and random, you know, experiments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it also is interesting because all of those upgrades you can choose when you level up, each time you select one of them, you're given one of three options, but which option you're given is completely random.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's about all there is. Unfortunately, a lot of this, you know, to talk about would innately be spoilers.
Right.
But, I'm really, really enjoying it a lot more than I thought I might. Even with having a little bit weaker gameplay in terms of the clunkiness, I still think it's a very legitimate game.
Yeah, I mean that means something. Like, coming from somebody who's such a fan of the original.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. The only thing I can find, I mean, mostly when you look up Tourist Breakfast, it pulls up these games. There's a description from a wiki for a game called Next Day Survival that describes Tourist Breakfast as canned beef stew and pearl barley porridge. So probably some kind of like oatmeal. which doesn't seem like breakfast to me. I guess the oatmeal does, but yeah, I don't know. I guess it's not something you're eating out of as a first resort.
Yeah. Does it seem like breakfast to you if supper had been vodka?
Yeah, now I'm seeing a bunch of really gross pictures of like weird bad canned food. And I'm sure our weird bad canned food also is disgusting too.
Yeah. It's there's a sort of one of the things I can't quite figure out from sort of these games that really interests me is exactly what role this sort of stuff like plays within like Eastern European culture, by which I mean it seems like there's a degree to which they're kind of tapping into sort of a known folklore or, you know, kind of popular culture depiction, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But it's not clear to me, like, how much of that is, like, original or how much of that is, like, you know, clearly now there's tons of people that like these sorts of games. So, yeah. You know, is that just in the same way that, like, say, superheroes are now, you know, really popular in America?
I don't know. So. I have no insight into their culture. So it's,
yeah,
I cannot comment. Yeah. And I could, but it would probably be insensitive and bad, so I won't. Yeah, I don't know, like all of this. Playing Pathologic made me real hungry for more stuff that is kind of in, you know, just kind of from Eastern Europe and, you mm-hmm. know, just mm-hmm. like Russia and Eastern Bloc kind of areas. That's an aesthetic at the very least that I'm down for. In between when we recorded last, David, and today, we actually announced in March we're going to be talking about Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. Oh, cool. So I'm actually going to finally be playing it.
Very cool.
Yeah, we're doing that on Watch Out for Fireballs. So I'm super jazzed about it. Yeah, I also I downloaded the ebook or bought the ebook of Roadside Picnic. So I want to immerse myself.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, I'm going to be excited to see. I was actually, you know, thinking in relation to this, one of the things I'm really interested to see is discussing some of the stranger plot points in it, just because, mm-hmm. like, I'm the only one I know that's ever actually played it, so there's certain things where I want to be like, did what happen? Did what I think think happened actually happen, or whatever?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's really cool.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. I've just you've talked it up for years, and and like ever since we started WoW, it seemed like one of those things that we would eventually do. So I kept it in the back pocket.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Well, looking forward to seeing how you like it.
Yeah. Anything else? Is it just
Desolate? About it.
Cool. Well, how do you feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the level 272 palindromes. We really appreciate you taking the time. I don't think there's a lot of stuff you can do. The big announcement is, and people get to guess this, we're going to be going to the Midwest Gaming Classic again. By we, I mean me and Gary. That is up in Milwaukee, and that is running from April 12th, 13th, and 14th, that weekend. We're going to be there. We're going to have a table. We're going to be doing a panel about creative games. So think of things like Mario Paint and Mario Maker and MTV Music Generator, things of that ilk. Dennis, Little Big Planet, I'm sure we'll get some talks there. So yeah, come out. It'll be a good time. Hopefully it won't be a terrible blizzard like it was last time. Who knows? Otherwise, though, you know the stuff, Patreon and talking about us online and leaving us ratings and reviews and just generally coming back next weekend. Am I forgetting anything, fellas?
Don't think so.
All right. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitch at GreenLaser73.
I've been just hanging out.
Very good. And stick around for some titles. All right. I only have one, which is The Doors We Made Along the Way.
So that's pretty good.
I, as kind of a side vote for that, I similarly had Technically Not a Door. Yeah, I was evenly split between Technically Not a Door and the one you just said. I can't remember exactly how it went, though. The other two I had is It Is So Rude and A Dark Horse or a Black Sheep.
Yeah, I had Dark Horse versus Black Sheep as well.
That's
I had Technically Not a Door. I had Quipmen Folks.
Sorry. One second. Dark Horse versus Black Sheep.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Quipmen Folks. Okay.
Hyphenate however you see fit between those. I also had Milk Fight.
Milk Fight, sorry. Let's see here. So the two that tie are The Doors We Made Along the Way and Technically Not a Door. So those that tied, I'm ambivalent between the two of them. Also, weirdly, the Dark Horse is Dark Horse be Black Sheep. Does anybody feel strongly?
I agree it should be Technically Not a Door or The Doors We Made Along the Way. Not sure which.
I like Technically Not a Door. It's a little bit more succinct.
Mm-hmm. I can live with that.
Okie doke. Cool.
It is so ruled.
I wish I had a gavel. Yeah, I don't have my bells out because I'm worried my cat will learn how to ring a bell, and I don't want that. So
that seems like a very specific worry.
I've seen videos of people who teach their cat to ring bells to get treats, and I wonder why somebody would do that to themselves. So I don't even want it to happen by accident. So I need to get a gavel. Let me go to Amazon and look for a gavel.
Wait, right. But then wouldn't you just be teaching your cat to like rule against you?
I mean, the cat doesn't have thumbs. Well, it's got a thumb, but it's like that weird little claw that's like halfway up its forearm.
Dew claw.
Is that what that's called?
Yep.
Oh, fun.
I don't know why, but I found myself looking that up on Wikipedia earlier this week.
I did not know that they had them until I saw mine just constantly biting at hers. She's very fastidious. Okay, I'm gonna go. Take care, everybody.
All right. Yes. See ya.
Bye.